This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. How's it going today?
It's going okay. You know, it's the start of football season.
Oh.
I mean, like, real football, you know, the professional kind.
I was going to say, I watched some college ball last weekend. They were sporting.
I don't mean to put down college football. If anything, I imagine college football is more pure because, you know, they want to play. Whereas, like, did you see Funny or Die did this thing with Bonnie McKee?
No.
Where they did, like, the Sunday night football opening, but it was, like, a true Sunday night football opening.
Oh, man,
where all
I have
they talk about is, like, concussions and Deflategate and spousal abuse and stuff like that. It's pretty great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Because we love to make fun of that. You know, it's Sunday football time. So.
Right. Yeah. But I still enjoy watching football, regardless, even if they all are monsters. But whatever. They're not all monsters. I mean, you know, what, Chris Cluey, who hangs out with Will Wheaton, he seems like a really cool guy.
Now, I give sports a hard time, but that is just an act. I do like football. Not enough to follow it, but I'll appreciate watching a game. I understand the strategy and stuff.
Yeah, it's a big day in my house because I'm a Bears fan and my wife's a Packers fan, and it's opening day and the Bears are playing the Packers.
Oh,
so we'll
man.
See what happens.
I'm surprised I didn't hear about that at work. We've got some Packers fan and some Bears fans in my office.
Yeah.
Monday will be interesting.
It's exciting. The other one's Thanksgiving, so that could be an interesting end to the day, but
they battle again at Thanksgiving?
Yeah, Thanksgiving night.
Weird.
Yeah.
I didn't think teams played each other more than once, often.
The division rivals do.
Oh, okay.
So the Bears and Packers play twice each year. Once in Chicago and once in Green Bay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's enough sports talk. Sport orbit.
Yeah.
Sporbit. I need to stop combining random words. But today we're going to talk about the comic comparisons, the com-coms. Stop combining words.
That's more of an abbreviation.
That's true. All right, it's time for the most recent. We've caught up to the episode comparisons. I've not read any of the comics between the last comic we read and this one. Have you read any of the 5-year mission stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's interesting because what they seem to be doing now is adding more, like, continuity to it. So, like, the one right before this, or the one 2 episodes before this, I guess, they're, like, shot across the galaxy and they end up in the Delta Quadrant. It's very Voyager of them, right? Mm-hmm. And their warp core won't work anymore. They don't have any more dilithium crystals, right? So, and that's like how that one ends. And then in the next one, they meet this woman and she's like, I can totally take you to this place where you can buy some dilithium crystals. And they're like, this seems really shady. And they go there and essentially she ends up selling the Enterprise and the crew to this like weird, like tentacle being thing. And then they need to find a way to get out of that. And they do. Spoilers. And they get their warp core working again, and then they leave. So at the start of Tholian Webs, which is what we're talking about today, they're on their way back, right from the Delta Quadrant. You know, they're not nearly as far out as Voyager was. But they're like, it's going to take a little while for us to get home. But at least we can get home now because we've got, you know, warp drive. And that's when they stumble across Tholian space.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they got out of being enslaved to the tentacle creature, because that would make for an odd movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they just starts up, hi, we're in the Delta Quadrant, slaves to this this tentacle guy.
I mean, but that would be bold, right? I mean, that would certainly set them apart. And
kind of an
in media
res thing, but yeah,
Yeah.
I don't think they care enough about the comics.
I don't know.
They don't care about television. Why would they care about comics?
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, in the Tholian webs, they're on their way home from the Delta Quadrant, which is weird because the Vulcans were in the Delta Quadrant and Vulcan's Vengeance. So, like, is the Delta Quadrant a lot closer in the alternate universe? Like the quadrants are maybe, like, rotated, like, particular degrees that it's really close to Federation space now?
Well, they say it's bordering the Alpha Quadrant. But apparently Earth is in the Beta Quadrant.
Right. No, I don't think so.
I don't know. This is what Larry says. And he wrote the book on it.
Well, then so, I'll believe Larry.
Like, I think at one point Earth was supposed to be like, basically the midpoint. Line between Alpha and Beta goes through Earth.
That's how I was brought up. That's what the Okudas taught me.
Yeah. So, but I think most of, like, what we know is in the Beta Quadrant.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they say that the Alpha Quadrant borders the Delta Quadrant. So,
which it didn't in Voyager, because they actually traveled through the Beta Quadrant for a bit before they got to the Alpha Quadrant.
Well, maybe
and they were always going back to the Alpha Quadrant.
Maybe it was a shortcut.
Right.
You know?
I don't know. Anyway, so...
regardless.
It's really close to the Alpha Quadrant now.
I guess so, yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it says that it's like on the border. I mean, it is three-dimensional, so I don't know how that messes things up.
Oh, it messes everything up.
Yeah.
So they're traveling at warp like you do. And then they get blasted out of warp like you do. And we get a really cool panel of the ship upside down as it falls out of warp like it does in Into Darkness, which is the coolest part of Into Darkness, when they kind of fall out of the warp field and spin. Whee!
That's pretty cool. The other thing I like is when they warp in Into Darkness, it has like the trail, right? Because it doesn't have that trail in 09, right?
Right.
I like the trail, and especially since it has that sort of, like, floaty handheld shot of, like, when it warps away, and the trail, you know, is still there, but it's, like, floaty, and when you see that, generally speaking, I mean, I guess I don't really prefer the 3D version of Into Darkness, but when you watch that scene in 3D, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, it looks awesome, you know? Like, just the trail going all the way into the distance. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, man, we're gonna get Star Wars warp, not warp fields, but the streaks in 3D.
I'm still not convinced that I'm convinced that 3D is the way to see Star Wars, because I'm convinced that's the only way you're going to get to see it in IMAX. But aside from that, I'm not at all convinced that Star Wars should be watched in 3D.
Right.
Not this one. Definitely not episode 8. Rian Johnson's already gone on record and said, I don't really like 3D.
Hmm. Well, in a couple years, it may be gone again. Who knows?
Yep.
All right. So, they jump out of warp. It's not those dilithium crystals that Shady Lady sold them. It's the fact that they can now pass through objects in the ship. They're in inner space. Interphase is that's the one where they shrink down and they like go and like fight viruses.
First movie I ever saw letterboxed.
Huh.
I was like, why are there black bars in the top and bottom of the screen? This movie is garbage.
Well, I'm sure the movie's garbage anyway.
There's a lot of people who love that movie. I don't know.
I just made a whole bunch of people crash their cars. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen it since I was like 8, but yeah.
So Spock's obsessed with Interphase. And he keeps putting his hands through things just to make points. They're in their observation lounge, and he's just like, look, my hand goes through the table. And Uhura's like, stop that.
It's cool, right? I don't know.
It's not cool in a comic book because you don't even really notice that his fingers are in the table in that particular panel.
I guess so. I guess so. It is kind of weird because, like, we just did a commentary for the next phase on my other show. And I had Philip and Daniel from Earl Grey on. And, you know, one of them brought up, like, you know, this is really kind of like Tholian Web, you know, sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, like, I mean, reading this thing again, I'm like, wow, yeah. I mean, that must, even though they don't reference it at all, and it's a different thing that causes it and everything like that, like, Ron Moore, who wrote Next Phase, must have been like, oh, yeah, you know, like in Tholian Web. Because it is very similar. I don't know. Have you seen Next Phase?
I have.
Okay. Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that they don't go through the floors, right?
Yes, aside from the fact they don't go through the floors. But we could have the same argument here, too.
I think I might have figured it out, though, right? Maybe it's the artificial gravity that keeps them afloat. Maybe there's something
like the artificial gravity affects the phase before and after it so that they're...
Like, it keeps, because, like, you know, I mean, we see that, like, if something in out of phase pushes something else out of phase, like, it, you know, it continues to move. Like, they push the dude out the wall, right? And he just starts tumbling through space.
Oh, man, that was cool.
So, maybe, but, like, the wall doesn't stop him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe there's something about the artificial gravity plating, which... It does maintain, like, that push against out of phase objects.
You just solved everyone's problem.
I don't know.
Larry's sure feverishly writing it down. I've got to put that in the next book.
Yeah.
But it's kind of inconsistent, even in this comic. The comic where they can do anything, and they're like. Spock is holding on to the edge of one of those big glass view screens in the back and then shoving his arm through the middle of it. Is there just a hole right there in the glass?
I mean, that could be, right?
Like,
I mean,
guess.
It seems like it is kind of random at this point, you know, and it's probably changing as well, right?
Right.
I don't know.
So they're stuck in interphase. Nobody knows why the warp won't work. McCoy is immediately affected by the madness that comes through interphase.
Yeah. And this is cool because this is sort of where it differentiates itself from the episode. You know, in the episode, the Defiant, for one thing, they don't just stumble across it. They're going to find the Defiant,
yes,
right?
Which is green and glowy, which they're not, which makes me sad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But the Defiant is the one who stumbles across it, right? So they're basically put in the situation that the Defiant was put in, and we're seeing how they react as opposed to the Defiant crew, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And also, since they're not on a rescue mission and everything like that, everything has kind of changed, and that's why the plot of this story is substantially different from the plot of Tholian Web, the episode. And okay, well, we'll get into more of that later on.
Yeah.
So
McCoy is angry, and Mad McCoy, he's kind of like he's experiencing visions and stuff. I don't know, but he's walking. Kirk and Spock are talking about it, walking past a red shirt, and red shirt's just like, I'm a crazy person, and so they nerve pinch him and take him to sick bay. And they find that McCoy has sedated himself.
Yeah, you'd think, I mean, because we see later on that McCoy left a message for them. You'd think since he had the time to leave the message that he would just maybe call them up and be like, look, watch out, guys.
I've got to put myself under sedation. In case you don't find my message.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like in Tholian Web, how Kirk leaves the message for...
Oh.
For Bones and them, and it figures that they'll listen to it. Maybe McCoy figured the same thing, and that's the equivalent there.
It's an interesting parallel, yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
I like that Kirk does an all-ship bulletin and then can't turn it off because his finger just goes through the off button.
Yeah, so does that mean that everyone else can hear him throughout the rest of the episode?
Right, that's what I was questioning. I wondered about that. So they find McCoy, they find his message, and he says that, you know, people are going to be in pain, and then they're going to go crazy. So you better watch out. You better lock everybody up until we find a cure. And earlier, Scotty had complained about sudden pain, and dramatically...
Sulu.
Yeah. Getting ahead of myself there. So Sulu had complained of sudden pain. And dramatically, as soon as McCoy says sudden pain, ship goes to red alert. Everyone's passed out on the bridge. Well, they're not passed out. They're stunned because Sulu's in the captain's chair. It's your favorite moment, even if he's a crazy person and he shot everybody else in the bridge. Sulu's in the captain's chair.
This kind of reminds me of what they were doing with the Troy-Worf relationship on Next Gen. Have you gotten that far?
No, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Well, you know, they were clearly setting up like a Troy-Worf relationship, right?
Right.
But like every sort of like step in that relationship was like some sort of weird alternate reality sort of thing. Like, oh, this is an alternate timeline, or oh, this is where they've been turned into animals, or oh, this. And then by the time they get to the payoff of like, oh, now they're in a relationship or whatever, it's like, but isn't that kind of a fake relationship? Because it's just been a bunch of like weird alternate realities where
Worf
they were in a relationship.
Didn't care about her, but then all of a sudden he's just like, maybe it could work.
I guess that's what it was, you know? I don't know.
What's that have to do with this?
But, well, it's kind of like, you know, Sulu, you know, here, we're seeing it's like, oh, you know, he's going to be a captain in the new series, the new TV show, which is coming out, let's say, September 2017. That's
what you said last week.
Okay. So, you know, we're going to show him in command, but, like, here he's in command and he's crazy and, you know... This is probably actually something that would be sort of a ding against him being under command. But maybe he's thinking about it, too. Maybe he's thinking about his 2017 show, and he's just kind of getting ahead of himself.
Yeah. You know? So like, he caught a glimpse of it, and he's like, I need to take command as often as I can if I'm going to be in charge of the show.
And apparently the next storyline is going to be about that as well.
Really?
Like, Sulu in command. Check it out. The first issue's out. I haven't read it yet because I'm waiting for the whole thing to come out so I can read it.
Right.
All in one shot. Yeah.
So Sulu's in command, and he's locked Kirk and Spock in med bay. Sick bay. Oh, they do call it sick bay. They call it med bay in the video game. And it upset me greatly. Like, you know, we've got to get down to med bay. What is med bay? There is no such thing. It's called sick bay. Sick bay.
Medbay is the laser sword of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
You have a laser sword. Han. God. Okay.
Well, they say, you know, whatever. He calls him Han. That's what he was called back then or whatever. Lando doesn't care.
Okay. Kind of like maybe he was called Han and then he's like, no, call me Han.
Right. And it's like, it's too late. I mean, that happens all the time. Like, you work with people, you know, whose, like, names are pronounced a certain way, and then, like, you talk to them, and it's like, there's this guy I used to work with whose name was, Manuel.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people call him Manuel.
That's unfortunate.
And so it was kind of like a 50-50. Is it Manuel or Manuel? And at one point, like, I went up to him. I'm like, how do you pronounce your name? And he's like, I don't care. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go with Manuel then. And he's like, all right, whatever. I don't care.
So anyway, Scotty actually has changed all the codes because Scotty is also crazy. And he's shot everybody in engineering, which is just Keenser.
Yeah.
Which is weird that it's a big engineering section to just be two dudes.
Were we talking about this last week? I was talking about this with someone last week.
About Keenser?
Well, about engineering always being empty.
No, it wasn't this show. So go ahead.
All right. I don't know. I recorded 15 podcasts in one day. So I'm a little, you know, but yeah, we were talking about how it's always empty, you know, like next gen, there's always people in it, but here it's always empty. And, you know, there's like one guy and it's never Scotty.
Right.
You know, it's like, why is that? And I think what we came up with was Scotty is like, you know, he's friends with all the senior staff and everything like that. So what he wants to do is he wants to just hang out with his friends. So he's like, I'll go up onto the bridge and, you know, just sit at my station up there. But he seems in the JJ verse to hang out in engineering a little more frequently. I think because he's friends with Keenzer,
yeah,
right? So,
and maybe because Simon Pegg likes to drink beer, and so he stays in the brewery. Can we just film all my scenes here? I bet he never leaves engineering in the new movie.
Yep. I'm one of the things that they do in this scene is they have Scotty getting a little cranky about Sulu being in command instead of himself.
Right? Oh, time for a mutiny.
It's like, why would they put the pilot in command instead of the guy who actually keeps the ship running?
So Scotty's great idea about maximizing his chances about getting out of interphase is to separate the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a cool bit where everybody's yelling at each other from through the intercom, which I guess is not an intercom anymore because the ship is now in two pieces. But we get a cool shot of the ship in two pieces. It kind of looks like there's a, you know, captain's yacht lifeboat kind of thing and all kinds of neat bits.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see it separated like that. Because you always hear, like, in the extra stuff about how, like, the original series Enterprise could separate. It just never did.
Mm-hmm.
But now we get to see it separate.
So Scotty's idea of getting out is that it would be easier to get the warp drive working again if there was less ship to get moving. So he's just like, screw you guys, and just pops the saucer off, and it's like, I'm leaving. And just starts flying away.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly seem like the best idea in the world, but you
know. He's a crazy person. But before he can fly away, here come unidentified craft who immediately put up a web.
Yeah.
So they must be like the Tholians from the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
In that they just immediately put up a web, and it's more of a spinny web than it is like a geometric web.
I like the enhancements that they made to the Tholians for this thing. It seems in fitting with, you know, like the aesthetic of the JJ verse, you know.
There's more of them, and they look like they're shooting fire out the back.
Mm-hmm.
So everything...
It seems very dynamic.
Yeah, very dynamic. So everything gets webbed, and that's how the first issue ends, with the saucer section in a web. And the engineering section in a web. Therefore, making Tholian webs.
Ah, let's see what they did there.
So it's not just a clever name like, well, you know, we've got Alien and Aliens. Because there's more than one alien. They actually put more than one web in here. And this may be the reason why they separate.
Maybe.
It's just like, it would be great if we actually had Tholian webs, like more than one.
That's cool.
So everybody's going crazy. Sulu's still in command of the saucer section, and Scotty's in command of the drive section, and Kirk is in command of sickbay.
Medbay.
No, it's sickbay.
Oh, okay.
It's only medbay in the canon video game.
Okay.
So Spock's like, hey, I found McCoy's notes. I could probably find a cure for like the craziness. And Kirk's like, I'm gonna crawl up every Jeffrey's tube from sick bay to the bridge. And while he's on his way, Sulu starts monologuing, which gives Uhura, who is apparently awake, time to blast him in the face. Stun, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did appreciate that Like, just as right as soon as Kirk's about to go into the Jeffries tube, Uhura's just like, hey, I've got the bridge. You can, like, I can, like, beam you up here. Or, no, I could unlock the turbo lifts. And he's like, okay, good.
Yeah, although something tells me he would have liked climbing up at least a few levels, you know?
He wouldn't, but he can't run. He can't run in the Jeffries tubes. He can't crawl fast. It's not dynamic. No,
I still think it's like adventurous, you know?
Oh, yeah, kind of. Yeah, I could see him getting a kick out of that. So apparently it's the time when everybody's stun wears off because Keenser wakes up and Keenser actually kicks, like takes like a wrench and like takes Scotty's knees out and then punches him in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he steps up on his little step stool. Oh, it's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And starts chatting with Uhura because he doesn't like to talk.
Yeah.
So they're using AOL and chatting.
It makes sense. JJ says he still has an AOL email address.
What is his AOL email address? Spielberglover@AOL.com.
You'd figure it would be pretty early on in terms of like AOL stuff, right? So it's probably JJAbrams@AOL.com.
It's true before you.
I mean, if he hasn't updated it, it's going to be before he was famous and stuff, we should email him. So it probably is JJAbrams@AOL.com. That's just a total guess, by the way.
Right.
I don't know for sure.
Don't email that poor person.
Yeah. He's busy making new Star Wars movies, guys. Leave him alone. The
so the idea is, the idea that Keenser has is to use a plasma blast to break the web, but he doesn't want to hurt anybody in the engineering section. So he suggests that they beam everybody off the engineering section to the saucer section, just like you would in an actual, just so what you're supposed to use the saucer separation for.
Yeah, yeah.
So Spock figured out the cure, so he wakes up McCoy. And here we're getting back into, not necessarily exactly like the issue, but we've got Kirk putting his life on the line via transporter. So there's another thing. Because he has to make sure that we could beam between the webs. So he chooses himself and beams to the engineering section so that they can start beaming people back.
But it's kind of the reverse, because in the last one, he's like, everyone else beam, and I'll stay behind, and then he can beam me next.
Exactly.
Whereas in this one, he's like, I'll beam first, and then we can let everyone else beam.
Exactly. Yeah. Same idea, but more people. Then, finally, after having them in a web for what's got to be, like, Spock's found the cure for something, and they've figured out all these plans, and people's stuns wore off, the Tholians are finally just like, hey, you're in our space. So it's been, like, a couple hours they've been caught in this web, and then the Tholians are like, you better get out. We can't get out. Well, then we'll just blow you up.
And, did they say that the Tholian commander is Commander Loskeen, which is the same commander from
I was hoping that was the case.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So they're not going to destroy them. They're just going to, like, tow them in the webs. So they've, like, caught them in a net, and now they're going to, like, tow them to the Tholian homeworld so that they can be put on trial. And they finally get everybody beamed off of the drive section. And it looks like they actually use the sparklies that you like in 3D to break the web.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Like, they just shoot off the sparklies without going to warp, which breaks the web. And then they decide to use their phasers? It's very strange. And apparently they don't care about falling into interphase by overexertion of movement or energy, because they just blow the crap out of all these Tholians.
I guess they figure they gotta do what they gotta do, right?
And then, in order to break the saucer section out, they just use their phasers to break the web. Which, why didn't they just use their phasers instead of the...
Maybe you could only do that from the outside?
Maybe. But they blow the hell out of those Tholians.
Yeah.
Except for, except for Loskin, who flies off, swearing revenge. When we next meet, no amount of trickery will save you.
It'll be interesting if we see the Tholians again.
Maybe they'll be in the movie. Maybe Idris Elba is playing a Tholian.
That'd be cool.
That would be weird to cast him as a CG alien, but hey.
Maybe it's not going to be CGI.
Oh, man.
Makeup Tholians? Or puppeted Tholians?
Puppeted by Idris Elba himself.
Yeah, right, exactly, right?
That'd be great. So, apparently, because the comic writers had forgotten about interphase and passing through objects, the webs counteracted the interphase thing. So now they're still stuck floating through things. But they got the ship back together and fixed the warp drive and then fly off into back toward the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah. And it ends with Kirk and Keenzer deciding to have a drink together.
It's a riveting one-way conversation.
Yeah, Keenzer is not a very big fan of talking. But it's a cute scene. I like it.
Yeah.
But he does talk occasionally, like in the movies, you know?
Yeah, he makes some noises and stuff.
He yells down that hallway. And yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I like this issue or this, you know, storyline. I think the reason that I think it's so cool is because it's doing what they've done in the past occasionally, where they're taking like a storyline from the original series and really sort of adapting it for the circumstances that are present in the JJ verse, you know, or in this case, you know, it's this space is out there. I mean, they talk about how the Tholians just kind of like hang out here and just wait for random ships to fly through here and become disabled and then, you know, go in for the kill or whatever, you know. And that's, you know, probably what happened, you know, to the Defiant with them getting caught in their thing and, you know, Enterprise coming to grab them. And here it's, they get caught like the Defiant. And I like that, you know, it's not time specific like a lot of the episodes are, or a lot of the storylines are, with the timeline changing for no apparent reason. It's not a beat for beat retelling of the Tholian web. But it's kind of a, well, what if this little thing was changed, this one thing? How would this scenario play out? And there's similarities and there's differences, and I like that. I like the differences and all that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, the differences, for the most part, make sense for the comic, rather than it's just like, well, this is different, so, you know, this is vastly different. I keep coming back to Return of the Archons. It's like, oh, you know, yeah. Landru was an artificial intelligence. He was a scientist who became an artificial intelligence 100 years ago, who, you know, experimented on, you know, social experiments on all these Federation citizens. And, like, there's no logical reason for all of that to be different. But, you know, coming back through and falling out of warp in interphase space and Tholians coming, it makes sense. It makes more sense than a lot of the differences that the comics do. And it's not, Vulcan's gone, and that's why this is different. It's just the timing's different, so they fell into it first.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty cool.
One of the better adaptations, I'd say, probably. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, not that I think any of them are really... bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I'd say this is one of the better ones.
Sure. Well, it was fun talking about the Tholian webs today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Is there that awkward part, like, near the end where he's, like, walking back to his shuttle, like, So will this take me back, or...
You said it wasn't very fast. Can I go fast enough to slingshot around the sun?
Can we slingshot the Dyson sphere? Because that's basically a sun.
Earl Grey.
Yeah, really, she's following the Hasbrat, I think, is really what it is.
Come for the revolution, stay for the Hasbrat.
It's got to be fresh Hasbrat. None of that replicates.
Like, Daniel's like, at the watching the end of this episode, like, tears are coming down the face. It's like, no, it's the Hasbrat. It's so spicy. It's what it is.
The orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently, the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward, because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday, and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey! The crew attempts to rescue three aliens in stasis from a bizarre program based on fear.
Like all fear, you eventually vanish.
Warp 5.
It kind of like is akin to when fans saw the Galaxy class in The Next Generation for the very first time, and you had basically a crew and civilian complement of, what, over 1,000 people? About two-thirds of that complement were civilians and their families. So you actually did have teachers and scholars and scientists and their extended families on board.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
One of the things that amazes me about the score for Star Trek The Motion Picture is that he only had 50% of the movie available to him when he scored. So he was scoring an awful lot to scene missing.
The 602 Club.
Where did he get the cloak from on the other planet? I really, really, really want to know. He shows up with the cloak.
He kind of fashioned it out of a rudimentary lathe.
Literary Treks.
It's a small point, but I thought it was really interesting to have here in the book because, again, that's what Star Trek Deep Space Nine has really always done for Star Trek, which is kind of make faith okay in the Star Trek universe and show how it's valid. And so I thought that was a really nice, it's a tiny point in the book, but I thought it was pretty powerful, at least for me, who is somebody who is of faith. So
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969. That had its moment. It had its time. And there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
And we have her to thank for the fact that Deanna Troi only has two breasts.
Yes, thank you.
Now.
Thank you, DC Fontana, for sparing us from a three-breasted Troi.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, or you can just stream from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. If you'd like to contact us and share your thoughts on the comics or anything, you can go to Trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose send a show and choose standard orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the button on the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using webcam's microphone, and you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars, or you can also find me on commentarytrekstars.com doing a couple podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and that's about it.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the internet and the network and all kinds of places. So before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I figure with all this talk about interphase and whatnot, it might be a good idea to read The Physics of Star Trek, which was written by Lawrence M. Krauss and narrated by Larry McKeever. It's unabridged, 6.5 hours long. What actually happens when the words, "Beam me up, Scotty," are uttered? Well, we wouldn't know because it's never happened.
Exactly.
Right? What warps when something travels to warp speed? Internationally renowned theoretical physicist and educator Lawrence M. Krauss provides matter-of-fact scientific explanations of the physics of Star Trek in this highly creative and informative guide for both the devoted Trekkie and the physics novice. And you can get this for free since you listen to Standard Orbit.
That's right. As a Trek FM and Standard Orbit listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. We'd also like to thank Richard Rutledge Jr. and Renee Roberts for being our associate producers this week by supporting us on Patreon. You can find Richard on Twitter at RUT8972 and Renee at MRES_1701. And if you want to join them keeping us in orbit, you can also support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as associate producer for our shows. You'll find out where the donations can go, things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out.
Yeah.
No comics for a while, huh?
No, I guess not. You know, I know they're doing the Mirror Mirror storyline, but that's, you know, multi-part and won't be done until, you know, way off in the future. So I guess this is it for the time being.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.